Mark Maron.
Are we on? Is this happening? Mine sounds a little distorted. How's it look to you?
I think this might be the most nervous I've been.
What's the matter?
Because you are the the podcasting king of you started this whole thing. You inspired me.
Really?
Yeah. And now you're here. I'm completely unqualified to interview you.
What are you talking about? You just have a conversation. I didn't start anything. There's no one. People have been interviewing people for a long time, and I just got lucky. I there were other people doing the podcasts, but I just do it my way. And for some reason, people took to it. Some people, and it seemed to be a unique way that I talk to people. But I didn't invent anything. I don't think you need to be nervous. I'm just telling you that. If you want to be, you can.
I had, this is me being a narcissist. I had
that I can relate to.
A boyfriend tell me that I got a role because I got lucky.
Huh.
And I always resented that.
Yeah, that's shitty.
Well, so what I'm saying is it's not luck.
Well, no, let's say cosmic timing. I think I had the talent and that I've been working towards it somehow or another for a long time. That I was prepared to do it. I didn't think that that podcasting would be the thing that would put me on the map, whatever that map is. But let's not say luck. Let's just say for once, my cosmic timing was good.
Have you always been pretty curious, like curious about people?
I think so. When I was a kid, yeah, I liked talking to people that seemed to have a handle on things or have something interesting about them or live or sort of presented in a way that was curious. I don't think fundamentally I'm interested in everybody.
Were you a lonely kid? I was a lonely kid. That's why.
What do you mean? Were you only child?
No, I have an older brother and we're really close now. I was just a lonely kid. I was just
Yeah,
I felt
I guess I was lonely, but I think I was more uncomfortable. I had friends, but it always seemed like it was an effort to make them. I've always felt like I had friends out of persistence.
Are you still friends?
Annoying people
with
to
anyone?
Tolerate me.
Are you still friends with anyone from high school?
Yeah, I'm friends with somebody from second grade, third grade, Jewish kid, Jew community. Hebrew school, David. I still keep in touch with him. High school, not really too much. Not even from college. But I don't keep in touch with too many people. Oh wait, one of my best friends from freshman year of college is still one of my good friends. So that's right after high school.
Did you go to any of your reunions?
I went to one. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
I waited to go until I had some, at least credibility in my business. I didn't go to, there was a 20 year one, I think, or maybe a 15 year one. I was like, I ain't going. I haven't even done Letterman yet. Something like that. I can't remember.
So you wanted to go after. Yeah.
I wanted to have something to show for myself.
Was there a gal that you were like, I got to impress? Like
from high school?
Yeah. Come on.
Not anymore.
What?
Not really.
But at least give us the romanticized version of it. Call her Rebecca. I don't know, Rebecca Duncan.
It's kind of the opposite. Because I went to a huge high school. There was 3,400, people. There was 900 people in my graduating class. So it turned out that this reunion, when I got there, it was organized by all those girls that you were ugh, those girls, they're still, they're still making decisions that affect my life socially. Those snotty girls.
Yes, I saw.
So... there was one girl who's a woman now who I didn't ever want to be romantically involved with, but I knew her and her
sister. Wanted to fuck her. Come
on.
I
want to fuck her.
Who doesn't? Yes, I want to fuck her too.
I didn't want to fuck her, but I did want to show her.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to, but it turns out a lot of them have been humbled by the great wheel of life. And,
age. Huh?
I don't know. It's not so much age.
Age,
but also there's a humility to it. It is age, but these people.
Yeah, of course.
We're so confident and horrible in high school, and now they're just fat and broken now.
And we're
I'm still in pretty good shape and broken. I've learned to use my brokenness in a positive effect.
Did you go to high school in Albuquerque? Is that where you went to high school?
Yeah, I went to junior high in Albuquerque. I got kicked out of private school. I went to the
whoa. Why?
Because I was a smartass. And I caused trouble.
No, come on.
It wasn't like drugs or anything exciting. I was literally so disruptive,
like a jerk,
and hilarious that they wanted me out.
I like this idea.
That is
unbelievably narcissistic that you just said that. Yeah. It's fucking incredible.
Yeah. I have a little bit of narcissism.
Oh, you do?
A little bit. I don't think I'm pathologically narcissistic, but I think my father is, and I have a residual effect. I have too much self-awareness to be honestly narcissistic. Like, I feel shame, I feel empathy, I have a conscience. I can't compartmentalize that well unless I have to. I'm not a liar unless my life depends on it.
Hmm. So what about poker?
I don't play poker. I wear my heart on my sleeve too much. I don't have the patience for it. You know, I just get frustrated and I'm like, why do I keep getting shitty cards? Like, I don't play poker well.
How do you feel about game night?
I don't do game night. I don't have that many friends.
I don't either.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Game night. Who does that?
I fucking hate game
night.
Like,
if I have, like,
I'm so bad at that shit.
Like, my girlfriend is not that social. I'm not that social. So when we go out, it's like a big deal. If we go out with other people, it's like, wow, we're doing it. We're going to be talking to other people.
Then you're like, let's get the fuck out of here after 45 minutes.
No, I usually have a good time. I know how to socialize. I'm pretty, you know, I can do it. Like, I can interact with people. I'm relatively charming, you know?
You are giving me a nice little shoulder rub right now.
I know.
Oh, that feels so good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But yeah, so I got kicked out of junior high, and then they uh-oh. That's the guy with the computer?
Oh, it's Cassie.
Hi,
Cassie.
Our head writer.
Oh, is there writing here? There's writing involved? Is he doing anything, this guy? Are we doing the podcast yet? Is it happening?
We just like to listen to our voices in the headphones.
And then do you do an intro or a thing? How do you structure?
You've never listened to the podcast?
What do you want from me? I have my own podcast and
I'm
busy.
Do you remember when I invited you? You don't remember when I invited you on
the
podcast.
In the parking lot of the comedy store?
Holy shit, you remember?
Yeah, I remember. Wait, what, am I a moron?
Oh my God, I thought you were totally dismissive of me. I was really sad.
People misread me. I'm usually just thinking about me, and you know, you come up with all this energy.
I'm blown away right now. I'm completely blown away.
Mark, I have to tell you.
Holy shit.
What?
A couple days ago, when when we had you booked, we were thrilled, and Sim was like, I gotta bring it up. Like, he was like, when I approached Mark and we talked about the podcast, I felt like Mark was completely dismissive and kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, you're a lot now, to deal with, you know, coming up with all this excitement, like to ask me to be on a podcast. Yeah. I mean, what am I supposed to do?
That's true.
Oh my God.
No.
Thank you so
what
much.
What the fuck? You're totally backing out.
No, but
I might have been a little over.
What? But here's the thing. Do you get invited on podcasts all the time? I'm sure you do. At the Comedy Store,
I used to get more.
Oh my God. You two are both fucking dicks.
Hold on. No, that's...
Oh my God. What happens? What's happening over here with this one?
I'm just shocked that you remembered me. I thought...
I'll tell you. After Sim talks.
Yeah.
I just thought that you get
I was probably a little dismissive.
A little bit, yeah. Because I was a little hurt. I was a little hurt. But now I feel a lot better.
You're hurt enough to tell your girlfriend that you were hurt?
Yes.
And that what you're expecting? What did you want from me?
All I wanted was, even like if it was just like...
We wanted you to say, oh, wait, you know what, Mark? Now is your chance.
What?
If you like doing an audition.
Okay.
You could say, oh my God. I'm so happy. I'm so thrilled to be on Unqualified.
Okay, here, let me try it. Oh, this is so crazy because I was just thinking about what a great podcast that is. And it's such a coincidence that you would...
Did you really come here
to ask me or were you just here at the... Or?
We're so glad that you're so honored to be here.
Honored? I mean, like, I didn't assume that you would ever have me, you know?
Well... It's like we do sort of a nonprofit segment, you know, like this is like how we give back to, you know, other podcasts.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh,
thank
you're welcome. You are welcome.
Don't mind
you're
being welcome. A charity case if it means I get
welcome.
To hang out with
you're
you
welcome.
Too.
Yeah.
And I think you were probably being a little needy.
A little needy. And it also goes to my, listen to me, it goes to this. It goes to that. I really wanted you on the podcast because you're a hero of mine. I'm going to be a little complimentary here.
Yeah, well, never meet your heroes.
That's what they say. They say never meet your heroes because you never know, and they might disappoint you. But I mean, we're in podcasting because of you.
Okay.
You're the best at this. You're one of the best. And we really look up to you and everything you've done for the industry. So I asked you nicely and you were a little dismissive.
I'm vomiting in my mouth. Because before you got here, Mark, we were talking shit.
Oh yeah, he's gonna make a stand?
No.
he's gonna show me. He's gonna give me a piece of his mind.
I just wanted the fact that you remember that I approached you in the parking lot, that's enough for me.
Yeah,
oh my God.
It is.
You were such a fucking sellout.
How am I a sellout? I thought he completely, at least he remembered who I was. Well, he remembered your name.
I know the show, and I know that it's popular. And I apologize if I can get a little snotty, because I don't know what people want from me. What am I supposed to say? Yes, let's make a date right now. I think I said, yeah, okay, let's see what happens. I mean, what did I do?
You send me an email and I sent you an email, but then I got nothing back.
Is that true?
Yeah. I did. I can show you the email, but it's fine. it's okay. I mean,
I do that more than I'll
bleep this out, but I know your email address. It's a very easy email address.
Well, that one's not the real one.
.com. I can bleep it out. It's fine.
No, that's the one I give to people like you. No, but I mean, I look at that one and I'm glad this came around, but like it gets to a point where for me, I don't have that much time. Like, I don't listen to podcasts. I'm doing stand-up. I'm doing the podcast. I'm doing the acting. And I'm doing, there's just no way that I can do it. So I usually, once it gets to my manager or to my partner, my business partner, my producer, that, this should be a thing that we do, then I do it. But I know you. And I remember you, but yeah, I don't do a lot of them because a lot of them turn out to be the same thing. And after a certain point,
wait, what do you mean by that?
What?
Like the same thing.
Well, I mean, I don't know what people want to talk to me about. Like if it's loose and we're having a good time, that's fine. But like telling my story, it's like, no,
you've been doing it enough now. You feel like every time you go on a podcast now to promote the book, like you went on Bill Simmons, you went on, who else did you go on? But you're always talking about your life being one of the godfathers of podcasting. Are you sick of talking about it? Is that
what
you're
saying? The story's been told. The book thing, like I'd never met Bill, and Bill Simmons and I, we're sort of lumped together a lot at a certain point in time. And I don't listen to his because I don't know nothing about sports or care. But my producer is a big fan and of his writing and knew the podcast. So I'm like, okay, I'll go on there and meet him because I think we wanted to meet as contemporaries. And it was a good conversation about podcasting.
Can I ask you, okay, first of all, dear listeners, our guest is Mark Maron, who's brilliant. He also stuck his green chewing gum on top of his phone, which is fascinating.
Where else was I supposed to put it?
I don't know. Have a piece of paper. I thought it was polite. It was totally polite.
I'll probably put it back in my mouth.
I'm just staring. I might put it in my mouth.
Part. You will?
I don't know. Listen, we're close, aren't we?
Pretty close. Well, we're sitting close together.
Hey, can I ask you something about doing stand-up, though? What is the addiction that I'm in the world of comedy, but I felt into it.
Yeah.
I love doing it. I'm grateful for it, but I'm intrigued by the idea of putting yourself out there, potentially getting booed, potentially getting heckled. And then whatever the rush and the reward is that for the stand-ups that I know, they can't stop no matter how successful, like there's still the draw. Can you help me understand that?
Well, I know at the beginning there's the, when you're doing like 5 minutes, you're just trying to see if these four jokes work. So like, you're really like at the beginning, you're like, I have these jokes. I've got like 9 of them and I'm going to go see if they work. So when they work, you're like, oh God, that was great. That one really worked. I got laughs on that.
Are you so terrified that your neck is shaking? That's how I feel.
I don't know. Like I think that for most stand-ups, and I've said this before, that like for a long time, a lot of the job is appearing that you're not afraid. Like 80% of your energy goes into, you know, pretending you're not afraid or appearing calm. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the act. Like I think there's a lot of fragile, sensitive, nervous people that get into stand up for whatever reason. I don't know if I guess I was all of those things, but I was a little aggressive from the get go. But like for me, the laughs, that whole thing, you know, like you still need to know if jokes work. I guess I'm probably not being very honest, but the compulsion to keep doing it. Sometimes I think I can't, like, I don't want to do it. Like I had to put together a special that I taped last year that's on now. Not last year. When did I tape it? Whenever I taped it, Too Real, my latest special, was probably the best stand-up I've ever done. It's on Netflix. And I didn't expect to be doing that. I really wanted to take some time off, but it never happens. But the act of putting a set together is very exciting. I don't know if it's addictive, but once you get rolling on it, once you know, like, well, I need an hour, I need an hour and a half, I need 2 hours. You know, I work on things a very specific way, and I'm very engaged in the process. I don't know if it's addicting. I know that I need to do stand-up to know who I am, because that's what I do. You know, at the core of who I am and at the core of everything I've done is stand-up. So I know that I need to get on stage because I don't want that muscle to get... to go, you know, limp.
But what is the feeling of having an audience respond to something that you? I mean,
it's a feeling of connection. Like for me, as I've gotten older, like I need more than just laughs. I need to feel that I'm open enough emotionally that, you know, we're connected, that there's an understanding, that there's at least a good portion of the audience that are very keyed into where I'm coming from emotionally and mentally and just what I'm thinking about. You know, I'm not really bullshitting too much up there, but I've gotten very comfortable in the last few years on stage. So I do play around a little more with technique and craft. So for me, some of the thrill with the audience is that, like, I'm applying more, you know, very intentional bits of structure to my comedy, which I didn't used to do. I used to just wing it, which was exciting. It was more emotionally visceral.
Will you explain a little bit when you talk about structure? What do you mean?
Well, just knowing exactly why a joke works and why the timing works, and then, you know, tweaking it from night to night, trying to put different things together to see if they'll work. You know, like if I start one night, I'll go out with an idea and I'll just riff through the idea, or I'll riff through it on the beginning of the podcast. And then somebody will tell me, or I'll tell myself, you know, that might be a good thing for the stage. So then I'll bring it up there and I'll riff through it. And I can see that the idea is something funny. And then once you see that, then it's like, well, how do I string it out? You know, how do I build the idea out? And then, you know, how do I get closure on it? And that can take a while because I don't really write. So I have to wait for the closure on stage. So for me, that is the most exciting thing. I think if I was really to, is that moment where I go up with an idea and it becomes funny on stage for reasons that I can't explain because I didn't write it down. It just happens out of necessity on stage. And that's how the jokes start to build themselves.
Is it the communal experience that everyone can somehow relate to? Whatever, you know,
I guess it's also the sort of the element of surprise, and people are excited, and that there it's shared thoughts. Like, you know, sometimes if I can get, like, lately I've been trying to get people really hysterical in a way that I didn't used to do, where you can just build things and keep pushing, and, you know, like there's a persistence thing to get them continually laughing. Like, I'm just kind of fucking around with you know, because I have a freedom of mind now, and I don't really.
What does that mean?
What's the worst that can happen to me? It doesn't go well. I don't care. You know, I don't need to do, I'm not doing it, you know, because I have to for a living, thank God. You know, I'm doing it because I love doing comedy and I'm trying to, you know, express things.
That's the mystifying thing about, I think, being a stand-up is how to deal with the idea that, oh, you put the gum right back in your mouth. I was going to put it in my mouth.
We took too long. I'm just going to do it myself.
Fuck you, Mark Maron.
Wait, don't be mad.
And I'm not. Well, I am a little mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
You
about
feel
stand-up?
That from me.
Yeah, a little brittle.
I learned it from you.
You did not. What were you saying about stand-up?
The idea of like, want, like, if I were, I could never do stand-up, but if I were ever to do stand-up, I think I would be so desperate for the audience approval. And I don't know how I could overcome the idea that, like, you know what, this is like, I'm going to dismiss the audience if they reject me. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be able to sleep tonight.
I guess so. I mean, I understand that. Like, it's for me, I don't know if it was approval. Maybe it was, but I was always sort of, it was always a love-hate relationship for me starting out with comedy. Like, it's like, why do I want them to like me? Who the fuck are these people? Fuck them. But I'm going to try to make them laugh. So that kind of shifted over time. And I understand.
And now what is
I understand what you're saying.
Because you know, I'm still at that place.
Excuse me. The thing is, like, it is what I do. It is the way I express myself. You know, I've tried a lot of different things in my life when I was younger to express my creativity. So that is what I do. So my freedom of mind is that I can say whatever the fuck I want to say on a stand-up stage and nobody can tell me not to. You know, contextually, I'm supposed to make people laugh. That's the job. And, you know, I accept that. But, like, I have a freedom of mind because I can do whatever I want. So that is really what is appealing to me about stand-up. It's like, you start doing it, no one can tell you what to do. It's the only rule is you're supposed to be entertaining, I guess, or you're supposed to get laughs. But when you start doing it, you define it. You've got, that's your stage. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to own that space? And that, like, that's a lifelong journey. And I have complete control over it. No one can tell me fucking anything. And when they do, fuck you. What, are you going to fire me from a club? Okay, I won't come back. You know, are you going to give me
Mr.
notes on my
Marin,
jokes?
Hey.
Yeah,
my
what's
name's
up?
Becca.
Hey, Becca.
I'm the manager here at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to tell you, we weren't thrilled with your set.
Oh, really?
So we kind of don't want you to return.
Really? Can I? Well, where's Adam? I want to talk to the manager because I don't fucking know you, and I don't know what kind of power you have here.
I fuck Adam every night.
Oh, so that makes you what? The boss?
Yeah.
Well, go fuck yourself. I don't need this fucking club anymore. After all I've done for this club.
Okay, good. But we're also not going to validate
my parking.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's fine. Well, I'll be sure to mention this on my podcast.
Oh, you have a podcast?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people listen to it, and I, you know, maybe, I don't know. That's fine. It's fine with me.
But listen, we're also opening up a secondary club.
Oh yeah, for people like me
down on Beverly.
That's happened to me.
It's called Joke, Joke, Joke.
Right, for people that don't make the cut for the big room here.
Yeah,
yeah.
We'd love to have you though.
Yeah, I can't make that.
I'd love to have you, like, read, you know?
Read for the part as the comic at Joke, Joke, Joke. That actually happened to me once. Like, that I've dealt with that shit before in my life. Yeah, I have, you know, there. I do have spite. What's going on over there?
Of course you have spite. I can feel, like, it reverberates off of you.
No.
Oh, yeah.
When you just did that improv with me?
Does spite reverberate off of me? Because I have it, too, but I feel like I'm pretty good at masking it.
I don't feel spite from you. I feel like you're barely keeping it together, and you're pretty sensitive, and you're sort of like a little fragile right now, and that you know, you're just and you're just the anger is like, you know, just protecting you from just completely coming unglued.
I love it.
Is that wrong? Am I wrong? You all right?
How could I deny? If I deny, it's a lose-lose with you.
No, Mike. It's not. I'm not. But that thing you just did, though, that's happened to me where I've been condescended to because of what I do, because I was not understood as a comic. It happened a lot when I was younger. And I didn't get a lot of work at some places. But there was one guy who had a big club, a club that I'd worked at, where at some point he decided that I wasn't right for his club anymore, but he has this other space for what I do. And I just couldn't fucking believe it. And I was just,
Was he able to like identify what you did that was specific?
Well, people
for the
like
other
I've
club?
Been a, I've been a, like I came up in comedy clubs, and then when alternative comedy happened, there was like I got lumped into that. But I always was a comedy club comic, and now because of the podcast and because of my relationship with my audience, you know, I do my comedy's just never been better, and it's just regular stand up as far as I can tell. I'm glad I do it differently than most people, or that it seems different to some people. And yeah, I've finally kind of realized, you know, who I am up there and what I do. There's no fear anymore, and no one can take anything away from me. So that freedom of mind I'm talking about, it's just that I don't give a fuck anymore. Like in the difference between you and me in terms of comedy.
I still give a fuck.
No. You're a comedic performer, right? So like for me, what I do is I have to do all of it. Like I got to write my own shit. And then like for me to get physical or to make decisions like that with, you know, if it's not, someone's not giving me a script to be funny with, right? So when you get a script to be funny with, you're like, you know, either it's written for you or you can make choices in that script, you know, to do funny shit or to, you know, take it to a level where you're going to show yourself as this comedic performer, right?
Right.
With me, it's all coming from me. So like, and it took me a lot of years to sort of be comfortable doing physical stuff, to find the freedom of mind to do it. So it's all, so that's the satisfaction. That's the addiction, is I can do whatever the fuck I want to, and I make it all up. And, you know, I get my thoughts across. I get my sadness, my anger, my passion, my, you know, love, whatever. It's all going to come through that stand-up.
Will you give me advice about podcasting? Or about life in general? You were really staring.
What do you need?
I guess I feel.
Go ahead.
Is this what you do on your podcast? You just stare at your guests deep in the eyes because it's.
I know. I try to keep a nice, healthy boundary, and I listen, and I do look at them in the eyes because that it's important when you're talking to somebody, so they feel heard and seen. Seems to scare you.
When you do it, yes. You dark, dark
this
soul.
This is crazy because you're normally staring directly into our guest's eyes. This is the first time I've seen you a little intimidated.
I told you that
I didn't
this
think
was
you were going to be this
the shit out of me. What the fuck?
This is home court advantage. You should have control over this thing.
He came early.
He did come early,
I'm sorry,
which kind of threw things off.
It did. You weren't completely prepared?
Nope.
Oh, really?
But I don't know.
We had to scramble to get this set up. Our writer wasn't here.
I wasn't in a hurry. I was just, I didn't know what else to do because I was in Glendale. I didn't want to go back home. And then I came here and I knew it'd be early. I wasn't sure exactly where it was. I thought maybe there'd be something to do around here. There's not.
Larchmont is 3 blocks away. You could have had a cup of coffee.
I could have, but I'm not drinking coffee right now. I'm drinking tea. But I could have done that. Yes. I did not do it. I thought I'd drive by here, see where I'm going to be, and then maybe go somewhere. And then I texted my manager. I'm like, do you think they could be ready for me? Look, this has happened to me at my house, and it's terrible when someone comes early. Because then I'm like, I'm not there yet.
Who's the, besides President Obama?
He was not early. Right on time. Helicopters, motorcade.
But who's been sort of some guests maybe that you've been nervous about?
I'm nervous about everybody, really, unless I know the person.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's different types of nervousness. Like, you know, there's fan nervousness, and then there's just sort of like, what is this person like nervousness? Are they able to talk nervousness? Like, is this person like I think they are like? You know, I'm never, unless I know the person well, or I've had many experiences with the person, I'm always a little nervous. But if I know them, I'm like, all right, so what's up?
You know, do you have strategies of how you get in? Like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I usually just start rolling before they, you know, right when we get in the garage, and I just react to whatever they're doing, like in terms of looking around the garage or talking to me. Sometimes I ask them where they came in from or what's up, and you know, and then I don't know how, I don't know really, I don't necessarily have a way of starting other than just if I can pull it off, they don't know that we're already on. So when they go like, is it started? I'm like, oh yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. And then just keep talking. I don't know if I have a strategy with that. Sometimes I interrupt a lot of people just because I, you know, what they're saying, they've said before over and over again. So I tend to interrupt until they stop saying what they've said over and over again. Unless it, like, I think what they've said over and over again is good, and that maybe the people that listen to my show have not heard them say it over and over again.
Right, right. Like people that have like their, yeah, their yeah. talk, their talking points or their...
Everybody, a lot of public people do. And a lot of times I don't necessarily know it, especially if I don't know the person, but their fans are always like, great job of getting the same shit out of Marilyn Manson. I'm like, look, I barely gave a shit, you know, and he was shit faced and, you know, I liked him, and most of my listeners, they haven't heard any of that.
Do you think, Sim, do you think that, because I think that there's a difference between musicians and actors.
Oh, yeah.
With like,
musicians don't have to talk.
With our interviews. It's definitely, and there's also a difference between male actors and female actors.
I've said this to you before. I don't know why this is the case, but I always feel like you're better with male guests as opposed to female guests. I don't understand why, but I always feel like you're just always on. Why do you think that is?
What are you talking about?
You've never noticed that? That you're better with male guests than female guests?
I mean, you've told me that before, but I think that it's because I fuck them in the back when you're not looking.
Wait, did I miss something? Was that part of it?
Do you need to go?
I should have come on time. Is that an on time thing?
It's an on time thing.
But I think that I'm hesitant to say this part, but I do think that women we're easily targeted for saying incendiary things or anything like that might be taken out of context or whatever. And so there's a stricter protocol around.
I think that's right. Some women won't even do shows.
Yeah.
Why? Why do long form conversations if they're going to get, you know, somehow sandbagged or like, you know.
Well, I mean, a publicist have asked me to get the copy beforehand, to get the MP3 beforehand.
They're protecting them.
Yeah, but I won't do it. Do you ever let people listen to your show beforehand?
No. No, but like people, I think people like know what they're getting into with my show. And I do have, it's harder to get actresses than it is to get actors. And so a lot of times actors, I don't know. For a while there, I just didn't talk to actors. But then once I started acting more, I needed to learn things. So I started talking to more actors. You don't know what you're going to get with actors.
Really?
Yeah, because some of them have an image and some of them have a mystique that they don't want chattered. Like, and I think with actresses, it's even more so.
Yeah.
So it makes them difficult to talk to and sometimes difficult to book because they don't want people knowing about their life because it might diminish their
mystique. You hide behind, is like playing characters.
Right.
And
less people know about you, the better.
Well, but also it's like, like not being trained in sort of the art of vulnerability, of personal vulnerability, you know, it's like we've, you know, grown up, if you're an actor, saying other people's words and then being like attempting when you do press to stick to like the script that you're supposed to stick to or whatever. And so you don't want to, it's not comfortable, of course, to reveal too much, but that's why that's why doing the podcast for me has been so fucking liberating.
Right. But sometimes you can get people.
But you must feel that way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I like talking to people. Yeah. The podcast is good for me because it's a full range of my capabilities. You know, like I don't have to always be funny and I can engage in a lot of different ways. But some people, like, it's interesting. I talked to Annette Bening and she's a real deal and she's been around a long time and she's won Oscars or an Oscar at least. And, you know, she definitely has a pretty solid public narrative. But, you know, it's at any given point in a conversation, it can be nuanced. There's some things that I think people who are pros at being out in the world publicly, media-wise, there's just some things they're just not going to talk about. And you can, you know, kind of push them a little bit, but you're like, no, it's just not going to happen. But, you know, sometimes there's little additions to the things that they will talk about that they haven't talked about. Those are the best times in interviewing people that are insulated or self-protected or self-filtering. Is there sometimes you may not get something juicy if that's what you're looking for, but there are moments where they're like, Oh, I just remembered this thing. So like there's a like a little window if they're comfortable enough where they'll be like, that just reminded me of this thing. And it may not be a big thing, but it's not going to be something they've talked about before.
Well, that like it was an unintentional side effect of the podcast is like when we talk to our listeners and they ask us for advice, which we're completely unqualified to give. But that
are you unqualified? Aren't you qualified by just virtue of your personal experience to address at least from that
zone? That's all we do. That's all we can do.
So that's qualified.
Is it?
I'm sorry. You want to change the name of the podcast?
Dr. Marin. But one of the nice things has been that it ends up sort of being a bit revealing with our celebrity guests in how they relate to our callers. Mm. And what they like, it's sort of a, it's an interesting avenue to get to know somebody, like through just through their, you sure. know,
their reaction. The advice.
Yeah.
Well, I that sounds fun to me. When do we do that part?
We should do it.
Well, we can do that after you do that
okay.
part.
Oh,
you can do an ad read.
No.
Oh.
Not in front of you. Although, if you want to, we can.
Who are you?
Should I clear sure. my throat a few more times?
What is it? Do you have a book coming? A book out? There's a book.
There's a book coming out.
There's a book. It's out.
It's coming out.
It's out.
You have a book.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's out. Your book is yeah. out.
You have a book coming out?
I have a book coming out.
Your book is out too. When by the time this is released, your book is also out.
Wow. When's this going to be released? Next year?
Fuck you.
I'm going to shelve it.
Fuck you, Marin.
Oh, here it comes. Look, yeah. She's got her shit together now. It took her took 15, 20 minutes for her to.
Oh my God. What a fucking dick.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Get your beanie on.
Yeah, there you go. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's good. Now getting she's here. Now comes the. She figured out a way in, and now she's just going to beat me up. Okay, now you're all open. How about a kick in the balls?
With a patent leather shoe.
Now it's sounding good.
Okay, deal breakers.
Yeah.
You're going to imagine that you're single.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, would this be a deal breaker or not?
Okay.
Number one.
Yeah.
She calls you buddy.
That would depend on the vibe.
Like, buddy, do you want to go to the Spaghetti Factory tonight?
Is this like the first date kind of deal?
No. You live with her.
I live with her? Oh. Hey, buddy.
Buddy, do you mind picking up some toilet paper?
I'm living with the person at this point. And just out of nowhere, that starts happening. Yeah, that would be at least a red flag if that was not established previous. I'm living with the person, and then all of a sudden it's, hey, buddy, how you doing? Like, what the fuck is happening? So I guess it would be
buddy,
at least a conversation.
Buddy, you're overwatering the orchid.
Oh, yeah. Who are you talking to? Something like that. What's happening?
Buddy, it's you.
No, this is not. I don't.
Bud.
Oh, no.
Come on.
No, dude.
Okay, number two. She is a Christian Scientist and believes in prayer over medicine.
Yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't happen. That's a deal breaker, yeah.
But she's smoking hot. She's so hot.
Okay, well, if she tells me that after whatever happens that first date, then we had a nice time.
And all your friends are like, dude, you're the hottest fucking girl on the planet.
Yeah, but she's a religious nut in some ways.
Well.
And in a very specific way.
She's healing you.
Deal breaker. No can do.
She is a vaginal virgin.
What? Okay. Well, why are you holding on to that? What's happening? So vaginal virgin, that means like the conversation is like, hey, I only take it in the ass? Is that?
Yeah, or the mouth.
Not terrible. I'm not a big ass guy, but mouths are good. It'd be a little weird. I mean, like on some level, it'd be, is it, she's saving it for some reason? If I were single and that was the deal, like, I'd give it a try for a couple weeks.
Mouth-wise. You're like, I don't even need a vaginal explanation. Just, you know, you're just.
And then, but eventually I'd be frustrated. I'm like, why can't I? And she'd be like, I'm saving it for a human. And you're just a weird animal that I'm experimenting with. So, yeah.
Okay. She doesn't brush her teeth, only uses mouthwash.
And yeah, that's not good. Because then you'd have to have this discussion. Like, why don't you brush your teeth?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because there's polyurethane on the bristles.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of, it's like a whole thing that like Crest and like Colgate and these.
Oh, right. Big pharma. Big,
yeah,
big
exactly.
Toothpaste.
Exactly. So I use hydrogen peroxide pretty much.
So just foam your mouth clean.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, don't you think my breath is nice or no?
I don't know. You know, I mean, if you maybe, so like hydrogen peroxide doesn't really, it's not, yeah, you know, the whole thing is just odd. And why don't you just brush your fucking teeth?
Okay. I brush my fucking hair, you stupid fucking dick.
Yeah.
All right. I also brush my pussy hair, you stupid fucking dick.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah.
Teeth are not, they don't have hair on them. I don't need to be actually brush.
Okay. I got to go.
Oh, this person is the worst. Of course you don't want to be with her. She's awful.
Is this all the same person?
Kind of. Yep. Yep. So, yep.
This person's got a lot of issues. So she doesn't brush her teeth. No pussy sex. She's a Christian Scientist.
And she's really hot.
And she calls you buddy.
She calls me buddy.
But she's so hot.
Yeah, got it.
She's so hot.
Yeah.
She's so hot. Okay. You go to a Mexican restaurant and she tries to order in Spanish, but she doesn't speak Spanish all that well.
I'd be doing a lot of this. Yeah. Okay. All right. Just looking uncomfortably at the server. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Hola.
Uh-huh.
Hola. Salsa e guacamole.
Yeah.
Per favor.
So that's what I'm dealing with? That's the...
But smoking hot.
I don't put a premium on smoking hot. A lot of stuff has to be, you know, like,
You notoriously dated super hot women.
Yeah.
One, two... They're all hot.
Yeah.
Don't get me
dude,
into trouble.
Come on.
Like, like who? Like,
I mean, they're all, I'm sure they're all great women, but they're all hot as well.
You mean like hot, like modelly hot?
I've seen pictures of her exes and they're all really hot. But you're saying that you don't put a premium on looks?
Ooh, I like this. Now we're getting Larry King style. Fuck you, Marc Maron. Do you like hot women?
Whatever. Like, hot can be like, I mean, hot is not really about looks, is it, ultimately?
Oh, lofty, huh?
No, the connection, right? If it, like hot sex is not about looks, is it?
Oh, sure.
Is it?
Oh.
No,
right.
Seriously.
No, you're so right. Wait.
Think about it.
No, you're so right.
Tell me about like the hot dudes you fucked, okay? And like tell me that there wasn't like a sort of half-ball Jew in there that was better than them. Seriously. Nothing.
Losing you got it nothing. Right, you can't hear it. But she's losing it. But she's losing it.
You
right
got
now.
Nothing. All right. Anyways, you know what I'm saying. So
I've never seen you this speechless ever, and on a podcast. This is amazing.
The thing about Mishna was my second wife, and she was, you know, she did model before she was a comic, but she was very sharp, and I liked her a lot. I loved her, but I fucked that up. Who did I have long term? How did I fuck that up?
Yeah.
I was married when I met her, and she got me sober, and I left my wife for her, and, you know, I was newly sober, and I didn't have a handle on anything, you know, emotionally, and I was very abusive and crazy and jealous and mean. I fought a lot, very insecure, and I just drained her.
Can you talk a little bit about jealousy? Because I think that's... I don't know. That's something that comes up a lot in our podcast. What were you jealous about? Like, or do you think that came from her, or like instigating, maybe subconsciously?
I don't have, I'm not as possessed by it as I used to be. I know that, you know, but I think I, in that particular situation, I'd put a lot into her. Like I'd left a marriage and like, I wasn't happy in that marriage. And like, I really clung on to her and she was hot and, you know, she could have most dudes. So like, you know, there's a mixture of insecurity of the combination of like, what's she doing with me in the first place? And how does this survive? How is she not going to go somewhere else? And then you actually make that happen.
that's a tough way to live. But I imagine that it takes two people to sort of like combine to come to that thing of like, this is doomed, I would think, right?
Well, I think that if you're in a cycle of jealousy and emotional abuse and, you know, the sort of you're incapable of trust or appropriate intimacy, that cycle, you know, some part of you thinks it's going to keep working. The like, you know, fuck you don't love me. You know, who are you fucking? Oh, you're crying. I'm sorry. Let's fuck. That cycle.
Did you find yourself ever in a position where you like were tempted to sort of spy or snoop or like go through her phone? Or
not until she actually started, you know, not until she left me, really, you know. And then like in retrospect, I knew there was some shit going on, but I, you know, I've been on the other side of that. There's a certain amount of karma to that. Ultimately, my big problem is just about you know being able to be intimate and trust people, you know, like, because, you know, you can manufacture intimacy in a few different ways. You can sexualize, or you can, you know, cause trouble and then apologize. And, you know, that feels intimate. Or, you know, just being able to have good sex, that feels intimate. But to really be emotionally open and trust somebody with your heart is a tricky business for me. So I spent a lot of years kind of doing patterns of other things to compensate for my inability to be intimate correctly. And I still, you know, it's a work in progress, but I'm not mean anymore. I'm not abusive anymore. I'm not as insecure as I used to be. And I'm a little over a lot of shit.
That's remarkable. I mean, it is. That's like...
You run out of energy for that shit. You know, it's like, you know, there comes a point where I used to do a joke about it. What was that joke about jealousy? It's like how I dealt with jealousy. It was an equation. It was like the joke was sort of like if she goes out and fucks some guy like once or twice, you know, I fucked her hundreds of times. So I'm like way ahead. I'm still winning. It's not quite right, but there is logic to it. If you put that much,
it's also so fundamentally depressing.
Premium on sex as being, you know, the thing that is the thing.
Right.
Yeah, I still have that.
Do you think that men do that? Don't they?
I guess that's they do.
Do you guys think? And please attempt to answer this honestly.
Yeah.
Do you think that you, for the most part, are the smartest person in the relationship?
No. Not in my relationship.
Whoa. Let's truly, truly think about this.
Like smart across the board-ish?
However you would define intelligence.
No. Not anymore. I'm with somebody who is in a completely different world than I am in terms of her world and what she does, and like there's an intelligence to that world that I know nothing about, and there's my intelligence, and then the stuff that, you know, I think I'm smarter than, it usually comes down to like, oh, you don't know that, how could you not know that? So that's not really intelligence. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I've she's got a lot more practical wisdom than I do, so I don't know how smart I am sometimes.
Well, the reason why I ask for many different reasons, but because so many of the people in our industry are these like incredibly intelligent, creative narcissists, and that are fascinating, but are also fascinated by themselves, like myself.
Probably. Yeah, I wish I had more of that part of it.
I think you might.
Really?
Yeah, dude, you're a total fucking narcissist.
I don't know.
Yeah, listen. You don't think
I'm
you are?
I'm not that fascinated by myself.
I don't know. You started a podcast.
I know, but that was sort of like, I didn't know what else to do. Like, it was a desperate move. And I was talking about myself in a fairly raw way.
You're a stand-up comic?
Right. And I'm pretty tapped. Like, I'm kind of...
all, like, roads are leading towards... And here's how I know as well. You're not insulted by this idea.
Well, no, because like the narcissism of the chore of talking about myself, like, is diminished by, you know, spending an hour and a half with somebody else. So like I never felt like in, you know, the first few podcasts, first 50 or 100, yeah, I had problems and I needed to engage with people to help me get through them. But like, I don't know that I don't talk about myself at the beginning of my podcast, just sort of like, this is so great, I'm going to talk about me. A lot of times I'm like, all right, what happened? I got to burn some time. I like really like there's, and I've pulled back on talking about certain elements of my life because they're just like, I had to learn how to keep things private.
Why?
I had to learn because it's like, you know, it's usually about other people. If I'm going to talk about myself with others and that person doesn't have a say in it or doesn't like what I said about it, it causes me more trouble than it's worth. And it's sort of, you know, it's not nice. Like, I can say nice things about people and that's fine. But I spent a lot of time early on in the podcast talking about relationships coming apart, you know, shit going bad, you know, like all that stuff. And a couple of women are like, you know, I don't have a voice in that. And I'm like, well, I guess that's true. So I'm only presenting my side, which isn't really fair. And all right, lesson learned. Don't drag your dirty laundry, even though if it's compelling. Like, I don't, you know, I don't talk about nuanced problems that I'm having with a person in my life because they're real people and I'm talking to 500,000 people. And that means 500,000 people are in my shit and in her shit or his shit. And they may not want that.
It's the deceptive nature, though, too, of like doing the podcast, which is so wonderful about like the intimacy that you have. Like, we're sitting here in uh-huh. Sim's place. And as you know, like, you know, with your garage, like you feel like this isn't going to go anywhere. Talking to some friends. It might happen to be talking right. into a microphone.
Yeah.
But, I hear you on that for sure.
You know, I mean, but like when I have a conversation with people, the interview part of the conversation part, like I know where they, you know, I can feel where they're uncomfortable. I can, you know, I don't need to go there. I'm there to, you know, sort of not make them feel uncomfortable. I'm there to have a conversation and have it be intimate, right? But any time that someone has said, I want something taken out, it's 90% of the time, it's about because they've said something about someone else.
Oh, really?
Yep. Absolutely.
Oh.
And it's not, you know, and I don't know what that speaks to really, but that is appropriate. Is that, you know, like, yeah, okay, I said all this shit about me, but like, I didn't need to throw that person under the bus. You know, and even if you think in your mind as a producer, you're sort of like, yeah, it wasn't that bad. You know, but you know it's going to start some shit. And, you know, and I think that's a relatively good practice. If you don't want to be alone.
Well, but also it speaks to sort of the intimacy, right? That you create that hopefully we help.
I don't know if it's intimacy as much as it is candid. You know what I mean? It's comfortable. Like, you know, people feel comfortable, so they talk freely. You know, I guess it's intimacy. I don't know that they trust me necessarily or that they have a lot on the line in that moment.
The chewing gum that's now back on your phone,
yeah,
looks sort of like a misshapen marble.
Sure,
but
or a piece of gum.
It's still
what?
It's still. I still want to.
What's really throwing
I
you
either,
about that?
Well,
no one
I
has offered
wanna...
to me anywhere to put it. You know, and it's been out there twice. I'm at someone's home. And I and what am I supposed to do? I'm done chewing it. Don't, and I'm not asking for anything.
I think
I'm
it's just, fine right there.
And I'm, we're, point, I have no problem with it, but she seems to be hung up on it. And like, and you know, and
I just think it's like well molded now.
Sure, you can make chewed gum into almost anything
can
if you have the time.
Can we take a picture of this? Cassie,
take a picture of the gum. Oh, this is great. Where's that picture going to go? Are you going to tweet it and just say Mark's gum?
I would. I'm going to say Mark's dumb.
What's going on? Is this going on? Is it okay? Everything okay?
Are you going to make out with me?
Is everything all right?
Oh,
you're terrifying. I knew you would be terrifying. Oh.
Why am I terrifying?
You just like.
I just was checking in. That didn't feel horrible. I have boundary problems.
I was hoping for this. This is great. I love this. Continue.
Is there more of this bit?
Yeah, I think there's one more question.
Right? Oh, okay.
Before there's one more question, a deal breaker or a how would you proceed? What would you like? A deal breaker or a how would...
I feel like we did a bunch of deal breakers.
Yeah. Okay. How do you proceed? You get word from your agent that Julie Andrews wants to meet and discuss a very important project.
Yeah.
When you arrive, or I mean, maybe at the chateau, she tells you, I know you are the only person I can trust with this. Would you be my partner on The Amazing Race?
The Amazing Race, that's a reality show where you have to...
travel around the world.
Oh. I don't know the show that well. I mean...
It's won like 10 Emmys and it's, I don't know, it's like the number one reality show. I don't know if it still is, but it was huge at one point.
Sim's an early investor.
I would really have to check my calendar.
Ouch.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to take a long time to shoot. And
we're going to go around the world together. You get your passport.
I can be singing. Is it going to be singing?
We can sing on the plane.
Me and Julie Andrews.
Yeah.
She's great. She has to be fairly old now.
Oh my God. Is what? This where we're going with this?
No.
You're going to like divert?
No.
Come on. Do you want to be on The Amazing Race or not?
With Julie Andrews?
Yeah.
Because I'm the only person she wants to do it with?
Yes.
Like it's her last wish?
Yes.
Okay. I'll do it, Julie.
Thank you.
Let's do a quick break and then we'll do calls. Thanks, Mark.
Sim, will you tell us what's happening?
Waiting for Nina to dial.
Oh, you want me to call her?
Yep. Can you put the thing up here so we can...
Sure.
Yep.
We see the guy?
No, it's just that speakerphone.
Oh, I see. It's on a microphone? Oh,
yeah, the internal mic.
Hello?
Hey, Joey.
Hi.
Joey?
Hi.
How are you, Joey? It's Sim.
Can't talk. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm going to introduce you to Anna right now.
Hi, Joey. It's Anna.
Hi. Nice to... here and talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. And we're here with Mark Maron, who's fucking awesome. And
big fan, Mark. Hi.
Hi, how you doing? Nice to talk to you. What's going on over there?
Yeah, tell us about your mom.
So, my mom and I have always been close. Not like the closest of close, but check in every week, very open about everything. About a year and a half ago, my stepfather passed away. And it sent a good amount of the family into like a really deep grief, as you know, losing someone does. And we've been really good with each other and kept up. It hit me hard. He's been in my life since I was about 10. And about, I guess it was like 5 weeks ago now, last I talked to my mother, it's been a little strained. She just dropped that she had just gotten home from a date and that she is online dating, and it threw me so hard, and it reopened a lot of the grief for me. And then it also has just strained our relationship, and we've texted a little bit. We kind of had a phone conversation, but it was awful, and I was mean to her, and it was bad. And it's like the floodgates opened, and I feel so so much guilt that our relationship wasn't as, because it's I can't wrap my head around this. And then the more I think about what she's must be going through, and then what's happening, just fuck, what's happening in the world, then I'm just like, everything that I'm feeling feels so minute and small that I can't seem to get myself to call her to even deal with it. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But why do you think that you had such a strong reaction?
It partly for me feels so fast. I know it's a year and a half. It's just, they were together for around 20, and it's just, it feels like it's just like disrespect.
But do you think that it stems also a little bit from maybe the idea of your relationship with her and your closeness with her? Does that make sense at all?
I think, yeah, there's definitely, I moved away when I was 22 very quickly to, they're in Missouri, to the East Coast, and we see each other, and it's, there's definitely a strain to feeling like I like abandoned part of my family. And then I think, God, it's almost the things I don't want to wrap my head around.
Well, you know what? It's weird. Here's what's weird is that you don't know your mother any other way than her being with that man and, you know, that balance there. So there, like when my parents got divorced, like I was older and it was okay. But, you know, she started, I don't know when she started dating, but she was dating a lot of dudes and she would tell me about it. And I had this moment where I realized, like, I don't know her at all in this way, because this is not, it's not like mother-son stuff, and that stuff wasn't even that great. But it's like my mom out in the world, vulnerable, you know, and, you know, trying to find somebody to hang out with. Because, like, she's never done that. I mean, like, not in my lifetime.
Right, right.
So, like, you know, she's taking these tremendous risks, and she's putting herself out there to fight, to try to find companionship, which she deserves and people want. And, you know, you get to a certain age and it's like, it's just hard to see your mother in that position because you don't know her like that. And, you know, the conversations become different. And, you know, now it's like sometimes my mother will complain about her dude. And then when she was dating, she would tell me these stories about these weirdos she dated with. And some of them I can't get out of my mind, but it's like, but, you know, they're just people outside of being our mothers and whatever our expectations yeah. are of them.
Wait, so I have two questions. One, are you in a relationship?
I am in a relationship. We're about a year and a half into.
Are you in love? Is it happy?
I am. We are. We're very happy together.
Okay. That sounded like that was not super convincing.
No. No, we are. We are. We are also long distance, and so it's, which works for us pretty well.
But you don't have like regular intimacy, and so and then what about your biological father? Can I ask you a little bit about that?
He's always been in my life. Spurts of moving away from Missouri, then always coming back. And they were always very, my mom and my father were always very good about trying not to bash each other for whatever their issues were. And they divorced when I was, gosh, I guess I was 2. And then now he is living in outside of Olympia, Washington, on the Puget Sound.
Oh, yeah. I know the sound.
And he very much has, he kind of has a life over there and is happily married again and has grandkids over there. And we talk when we can and see each other when we can afford it.
So do you think that, that your reaction to your mom finding somebody is the idea of sort of losing her, like, are you know what I mean? Like that losing her to somebody else.
I think that's definitely part of it. And then it's also what's really been going through my mind in the last God, a couple, really specifically the last couple of days, has been just of like losing my stepdad. He was so important to me. He was very like, he was an older man, and he like Marine in Vietnam War, and he like supported me wanting to have a life in the arts and have my own career and do something a little non-traditional in his eyes. And he saw that in me and supported, and he supported me coming out. He was always there.
He sounds like a fucking awesome guy. And like how fortunate that you got to experience him in your life. You know, that's so rare. I was lucky enough to have parents that supported me like to pursue acting, and I know how rare that is. I think you can't punish your mom. She made a good decision.
No, like, and that's what I feel like I'm doing right now, and it's so hard to just like leave that behind.
You can't. Truthfully, she made a really great decision the second time around, you know? And so you may have to trust her on the idea that she's going to make other good decisions. And also, you know, everyone needs a little loving. Everyone needs to like sleep in late and watch like terrible television and order breakfast in bed and, you know, and have like sloppy, disgusting kisses.
Hey, Joey, I'm going to put Nina on real quick. Nina went through a similar situation. So Nina, when you talk about
okay.
it real quick.
Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry to crash this party. We'll get through this, but when I was 11, my dad actually died, and about a month afterwards, my mom started dating somebody new. So when I heard this, I was like, oh God, this is so familiar. And I'm not an angry person. I don't lash out. I'm not an explosive person, but I mean, the only time I've actually felt anger was in that moment, because I was so confused as to like, well, how could you move on so quickly? This is someone, you know, who raised us, who's been in our lives.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, but I think having more perspective on it and kind of taking myself out of the equation, it really became about how my mom was dealing with it, how my mom couldn't, you know, she had this partner in crime for so long that she needed someone to lean on. And maybe that's part of it too, is that she just needs that companionship. Maybe it's not even the relationship part. It's just the friendship of someone who can empathize, and someone who's kind of around her age who can empathize through life experience. And I mean, I didn't have perspective on this for a long time, and it's still really hard for me to work through. And I really, you know, I'm 20 and I haven't really seen the world yet, but it really, I think, became about my mom's own grieving process and respecting that. And I mean, it is a really hard thing to wrap your head around, and I wasn't great at it coming up. I was very resentful. I was very frustrated and angry, and I think that channeled in my own grief. But at the end of the day, it's just about how your mom is going through this. Like, your mom was with this person for how long did you say?
About 20 years.
Yeah, and those 20 years are incredible, and to suddenly like not have that person with you is really frustrating, and you don't really know how to come to grips with it. And even though you're older, it's hard to, I think, and after talking to my mom about it, it's hard to reach out to your kids because the relationship is different. So from my own experience, and I don't know if this will help or if this does help, but I just think that it's a place of companionship. It's just a place of comfort and someone that you can talk to about stuff like that.
Yeah,
I don't know if that helps, but yeah.
I do really respect how she, because we've never really had boundaries with each other, which is, I think, part of the equation too, is that we've always been so open with each other. Like, since I was a kid, it was always about openness and just talking. And so it was always like she was part of a friend, and then she kind of dropped it in just in a conversation versus being like telling it straight. And now I'm like, I almost want to figure out a way to put a boundary temporarily on, like, let me bring it up. I'm interested, but I need to get there on my own.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of your process, you know? And I think your mom will be very understanding of that. I think it's something that, I mean, this, in grief especially, something this big and this, like, monumental, and something that changes kind of the course of your life and the way you think about the world, especially when it's somebody who champions you. I think that's a big part of it too, is you lose this pillar in your life.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, that I think you need to just kind of, like, be open. I mean, if you guys don't have these boundaries, then talk to your mom about maybe just needing some time to like cope with this. Like you're still digesting the loss of somebody who is huge and so present in your life that it's okay and it's totally valid for you to take that time to process.
Oh, totally. Sorry, I'm
no.
Crying.
Oh God.
Thank you, Nina.
Dude.
Thank you. That was
so
that
love
was,
you yeah. so much.
That was beautiful, Nina. Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody's crying over here. Cry fest.
She said it really well. There's a lot of losing the pillar that was a lot of my stepdad in a lot of our lives. And I think he brought together a lot of family, brought together a lot of extended family. And I've never really even really thought about that. I feel like I went through the grief and then kind of stifled it to get myself keep going in life and just keep moving forward. And just really honoring him is, I know deep down, she's not leaving him behind.
Can you tell her that? Can you tell her, like, Mom, I reacted out of anger because I'm still grieving, but
yeah,
I love you and I want the best for you. I want you to feel companionship, and it's gonna be a little hard for me because I loved my stepdad so much.
And I think it's partly when having the distance from her, I'm not seeing her day to day. I'm not seeing what her life has become now post him. When we see each other, it's moments of celebration, it's vacation, it's moments away from the everyday things that are, like you said, wanting to the intimacy of someone there.
Hey, Joey, we have to go.
Yeah.
Thank you so much,
Joey,
for sharing this with us.
Please, please keep in touch, and please tell your, you know what? I would put money, well, not that I'm a gambling lady, but that your mom would so love to hear exactly what you told us. And just that you love her, you miss her, you miss your stepfather, and, you know, and like that it's, that this is all difficult for you, but you don't want to punish her and you want to keep like communication open. And I have to tell you, I predicted that a lot of our listeners are going to really relate to this phone call. And so please keep in touch, because I think that, you know, this.
Thank you.
These are challenges that.
We haven't had a call like this. This is the first time we've had one.
And I don't know. I mean, sometimes I'm 40 and I think about the idea of losing one of my parents. I can't.
No,
even,
I'm right.
I can't even. I can't.
I know.
Like,
you want to go there.
Cannot. But listen, but love your mom.
Yeah.
And please keep in touch, okay? We love you.
Thank you. And thank you, Nina, for that.
Yeah, Nina, that was fucking beautiful.
That was really beautiful.
Here.
Oh, I hung up by accident.
No, it's okay.
Joey, I'm sorry I hung up on you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry, I'm like pulling on.
Joey is gone. I'm getting back.
No, no, you don't have to. I don't know what I don't know. Maybe just if Joey, if you listen back to this, like just don't, like you still have that other pillar. Like you still have your mom. So like don't push away that like love that you still have. It's very easy to do that. But I mean, it's harder to lean into it and it's easier to push it away. But if you just, I mean, Ani gave a good advice of just like saying exactly what you said here to your mom. Your mom's understanding and empathetic. And I think it'll just open up a different kind of world of understanding for you and your mom. I don't know.
Life is fucking short.
Yeah. That was all very heavy and emotional.
Was that too much for you, huh?
No, no, I don't mind.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were, you know,
I can handle
into
it.
This kind of thing.
I
we have one more call. Actually, the next call I can handle
emotions.
Don't you think that that's like an odd
I cry
thing
a lot on my podcast.
Stand-ups, though.
What?
Well, and being in the world of comedy, it's like the suppression of...
I don't know. I cry a lot more now than I ever did.
Like, why?
Because like I get attached to people's story, you know, and I get like, I just feel... I don't know. I cry a lot in the garage when people talk to me. Like not like weeping, but like I get moved.
Hello?
Oh.
Hi, Cynthia. It's Anna.
Hi, how are you?
Great. We're here with Mark Maron.
Cynthia's 27 and she's in Santa Barbara.
Hi.
So Cynthia, you have a question about male-female best friend relationships and something's going on with one of your buddies. What's happening?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Massachusetts, but I live in Santa Barbara now. So a couple weeks ago, I went home to Massachusetts and I was trying to get together with my best friend. We hadn't seen each other in a couple months. So I made plans with them three separate times. And each time they ended up falling through or he didn't show up, various things happened. And so I was pretty upset and I called him out on it. And after a lot of prying, he said that part of the reason that he couldn't, that he kept bailing was because his girlfriend had an issue with our friendship. He or she was uncomfortable with the two of us hanging out. I'm not trying to come between him and his girlfriend. I like his girlfriend a lot, actually. And I don't know what to do to make the situation better. And on top of it, this is like the third time that this has happened to me with close male friends. So I'm kind of rambling right now. So.
No. This is so relevant to what Sim and I do. And as now we're aging friends.
Yeah,
aging,
we've been friends for a long time.
Friends.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, do you have, and please, because the only way that maybe this could be potentially helpful is if you're totally honest with yourself, and I know it might be a little touchy, but do you have any romantic feelings at all towards him?
No, I just want to be friends with him. I thought about it before she was in the picture. But as soon as she was in the picture, him and I don't make sense at all. And him and her make a lot of sense.
Has he expressed feelings towards you in the past before her?
Before her? Not in a tangible way.
Uh-huh.
We've been flirty before, but nothing like it just would never happen, if that makes, like, I don't know how to describe it.
Did you ever make out?
No.
Whoa, that was a long
did you just try to kiss once?
Was there a drunken night camping under the stars?
You guys kissed once.
She's not answering.
Everyone's vomiting. Okay, you guys.
We were both really drunk, and it was bad.
There we go. Mark knew it all along.
What happened when you were really drunk?
We made out.
Oh, you just made out?
So,
yeah.
How was that?
We both agreed the next morning that it wouldn't work. It, like, mutually, we both just want to be friends.
Right. But did it feel good?
When does making out not feel good?
Yeah. In the moment it did, but like the next morning it felt crummy.
I wonder if he told his girlfriend about
this
that.
This is the thing. Yes, Mark, you're totally on to this. Yeah.
I'm no dummy.
You're no dummy. You have a podcast that came before ours.
I'll give you advice.
Cynthia, but... I think that clearly your friend's girlfriend views you as like a threat, and maybe with, you know, like there that might be somewhat justified in the sense that you guys have a little bit of a history. There may be chemistry. I don't know. I think a platonic friendship between you two might be really difficult to have.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect, and this is me being totally arrogant and presumptuous, I suspect that that you may have stronger feelings for him than you know, just being a friend, which is why you want to be friends with him, and he may have the same feelings towards you, which is why he told his current girlfriend about maybe some stuff that happened between you guys, which is why she's like, there's no fucking way you're seeing her.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, he totally told her that they made out once and it was just once and it was, that's not a big deal. But in her mind, she's thinking it can happen again.
Right.
But then he's also using her, the woman we're on the phone with right now, to put a wedge in and not really commit or be intimate with the person he's with now.
Is there anything I can do to make her feel better about it, though? Because I don't want that to happen ever. Like, even if she wasn't in the picture, even if we were both single, I wouldn't want anything with him.
It's sort of on him.
I think that, you know, kill her with kindness. But if you do want to do that, it takes a lot of effort. I would definitely only reach out to her, not to him. And just like continue to just be like, hey, I'm your friend. You know, I want to be friends. Is there any way when I come back to Massachusetts, we can hang out? I'd love to see you. Let's do a girls thing. Like, this is a commitment, though.
Do you know her?
Only through him.
So how's that going to work? Are you going to make new friends now?
Well, that, like, listen, if she wants him in her life, then this is the only strategy.
Oof, that could all blow up.
Hey.
I'm not trying to be negative.
No. But I do think that
this is one of those cases that's not going to work. When Amy and I started dating, she was a little intimidated, and I'm gonna say that because who can't be? I mean, my best friend is Anna fucking Faris. Of course they're gonna be intimidated.
What do you mean?
What did you do? You were unbelievable. You went out of your way.
I wore like a tiny string bikini and high heels and I trotted around to your place and I was like, oh, Sim and I are just great friends.
You went out of your way. You went out of your way to make Amy feel special.
But, yes. Thank you for saying that. But with your past relationships, I didn't do that. I felt like I wasn't as maybe aware of the idea that like a platonic relationship could be threatening.
Right.
And so I wasn't maybe all that considerate.
It made all the difference in the world. Amy.
But it's also her. It's Amy too. It's like Amy wanted to be my friend as well. And that like, yeah. But, and maybe also we're getting old. I don't know. But
here's what's probably going to happen is you guys are going to start meeting on the sly just to have coffee.
Oh, fuck.
Uh-oh.
And
Mark,
like,
what the fuck, you doomsdayer? All right. Bring it, Mark.
Oh, am I not? I don't know how much I'm supposed to chip in on the structure of the show.
Thanksgiving.
Here's what's going to happen.
So Cynthia flies home for Thanksgiving.
He's going to lie to his girlfriend so they can just have a friend time.
Right. They meet like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving at what? At, like probably not Starbucks. Way too public. They're going to
Friendlies in Massachusetts. Do they still have Friendlies?
Just to talk.
Yes, we still have Friendlies.
Maybe get ice cream.
And
yeah, no, I mean, like, that's just it. It's just, sadly, I think it's going to be on him because... I mean, you're obviously not going to pester him. You can say whatever you're going to say. Like, it's sort of sad that, you know, we can't be friends because she's uncomfortable. And you can reach out to her. But, like, I don't see how that doesn't just become some sort of, like, you know, tricky triangle situation. Maybe she'll be like, oh, she's really nice. I'm so glad we did that. Now you can totally go over there. So I just don't see that happening, right? So ultimately what happens is, you know, you're going to be in town and he's going to be like, all right, I'll try to meet you somewhere. And then he's going to lie to her just so he can, you know, hang out with you for a little while. And, you know, if you can get away with it, you know, so be it.
But but here's the thing. I just want
is that
you to
bad
protect.
Advice?
No.
That's probably what's going to happen. It seems like it's going to happen.
But I just want to make sure that you protect yourself. You know, because it seems to me like you may like him in a more romantic way than maybe you want to fully admit, because that's just the nature of things, and I completely understand that. I mean, Mark Maron is sitting here next to me, and I think that he likes me in a way that he doesn't fully want to admit because he's looking at me deep in the eyes right now. I can't tell if it's lust or anger.
I think that we have a nice chemistry. I mean, I wouldn't go to town with the liking thing. I don't fucking know you.
Turns out he's a jerk.
Let's give her some final advice.
But no, but I think I just think protect yourself, and I don't know if I just don't know if like the friendship is worth pursuing if he's going to be in a relationship.
Just take a step back and see how it goes. If they break up, maybe you'll get your friend back. Yeah. But at this point, just go, take a step back.
Don't you think like Santa Barbara, isn't it filled with like
seals? There's a lot of seals. Isn't there? Oh, not Santa
Barbara. There are a lot of seals.
I love how you finished
seals in Santa Barbara too?
I don't know. San Francisco, not...
No. Are there seals up
there's
in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, there's seals. There's,
yeah, oh, there's seals in Santa Barbara.
Okay. So
yeah.
Cool, right? Seals are great.
Yeah. Not as many as in
La Jolla?
San Francisco.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But they're here.
Okay. I'm
Meet
sorry.
Meet a guy named Ryan Travis. Take his Prius up to the Hearst Castle, break in.
Go swimming in the blue pool.
Go swimming in the blue pool and be like, I used to have a crush on this dude. Fuck this. Woo. Get arrested. Spend a couple nights in jail. We'll come bail you out. And then go see the seals. Pet them.
Yeah.
Get arrested again. And we'll come bail you out again.
How does that sound?
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. It's our pleasure. It's our pleasure.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I don't
even
know.
Thank you for the advice.
I don't even know if we gave you advice, but I'm just worried that this dude's like playing all parties.
I knew it deep down. I just don't think I was ready to admit it to myself. So it's good to hear somebody else reflect that back to me. So.
Well, I love you. We love you. Thank you for being
Oh, thanks. I love you too. I love your podcast. I love everything you do.
Oh, thank you. Oh, God. My like heart is just thumping right now. Thank you so much. All right, Cynthia. All right, we love you. And we will bail you out anytime.
Thank you. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
Bye.
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 I've never bailed anybody out before.
Okay. I've got to...
You got
to
get out of here?
Well, I got to pee, one.
All right, we're going to wrapping up right now. We're going to plug your book.
Oh, yeah, there's relationship stuff in my book, Anna.
I stayed up late last night reading it.
It's fun, right?
It's so good.
It's fun. You know a lot of people
fun.
In there.
I would never use that. Do you know, one
there's
time
a lot of heavy,
Denise
beautiful
Richards,
stuff in there. Denise Richards, yeah.
We were on the set of Scary Movie 3.
Yeah.
And she said... to me that being married to Charlie Sheen was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I thought that is such an odd thing to describe marriage as.
Well, he probably was fun at some point. I don't think now.
Anyway, so I don't know if I would describe you or your book as fun.
Well, I think my point is it's engaging and it makes you laugh. And yes. You cry a little, and there's a lot of stuff in there from a lot of people that, you know, we all know. Little kernels of wisdom and fun and sadness and laughs.
I feel like I am literally waiting for the punch, which is the title of your book.
I have to pee.
Words to Live By from the WTF podcast with Marc Maron.
Yeah.
And it just came out.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here.
It was great. I had a good time.
Do I now sound like Terry Gross a little bit?
Do you? Maybe a little. Just
now you're kind?
I was kind the whole way. I don't know what you
Have
think.
You been holding back?
I don't know what
you... Do
you
want to call me just a cunt? Just
no.
Do it.
No, you haven't been cunty.
No, of course not.
You've been like, you know, erratic, but, you know, not cunty. Not, I wouldn't call this, I wouldn't say you were grounded. But not cunty.
We should retitle it.
Ungrounded?
Ungrounded. Ungrounded with Anna Faris.
Marc, thank you so much.
It was great. I had a good time. Where's the bathroom?
Right down there.
Okay.